pushing those buttons, depending on what my state is. And so that's important for acting, but I think it's also important just being in the world.
Absolutely.
And trying to get along with people.
Absolutely. And we have fantastic teachers. We actually have teachers that are currently producing and directing and in shows, and it's kind of ironic because in a normal academic setting you have your professor and there's a clearer hierarchy about like that boundary. Here the joy is that these are your colleagues, and you're leaving, you sometimes you're in shows with them and you're directing with them, you're producing with them, so it really changes the academics, and it really allows you to be a human being and to really learn when mentor with people.
And the Actors Conservatory has been in that location, directed by Beth Harper, for 31 years. She recently got a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Drammies for doing this. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people important that have, and around the country, probably around the world, that have been to that acting conservatory. And mm-hmm. so they're connected as well. So we see the students from last year, and mm-hmm. we'll continue to see students from future years.
So in talking about feminism and this event, We Grab Back, you know, and obviously this conservatory has been a profound thing for your mm-hmm. acting. What do you see as the significance of acting in truth in this time that we're moving in 2017, and how can actors be utilizing this network and addressing these issues that feminists are having to address?
I mean, my goodness, it's our job to address these issues. It's our job to be on this stage and in film and to reflect the reality of what's going on. Although theater is a heightened sense, it's still a reflection of today. Actually, we actually have a production going up in February. It's called In the Blood by Susie Laurie Parks. And it actually discusses this role with this woman who's combating all types of societal structures against her. And it's just ironic that we're in the time that we are, and this African-American woman is experiencing this. And so we are doing that in the next month, and that is a reflection of what is going on, and just moving through the world. And so hopefully people will come to that and see that, and see that we actually are putting things on the stage that are reflecting Portland, and not just Portland now, but Portland in 3 years and Portland in 2 months. And just, you said, the intersectionality of what Portland is growing, because Portland is a very liberal and open place to be. And so, of course, our artwork is going to reflect and should, and it's our responsibility to reflect that.
Yeah, I mean, people say art imitates nature, but I think also sometimes art goes against nature in the mm-hmm. way that humans are very hierarchical. And anytime they notice a difference, if somebody feels fear or pain, they tend to lash out and attack something that's different. And we have when there's a lot of diversity, when there's mm-hmm. a lot of gender diversity and racial diversity, then that you can see more attacks, I guess, of people against people. So the art, I think, allows people to see from another perspective mm-hmm. and have more compassion.
And to challenge that. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I think we sometimes fear confrontation, but a mentor has told me, you know, sometimes growth doesn't come from just everybody getting along. You have to have that friction to be able to grow, to be able to experience things that make you so uncomfortable that it challenges who you are. So...
yeah, we're almost out of time here. So I just want to make sure that people get all the details about the event, We Grab Back. So can you give us when and where?
Yeah, it's at Portland Actors Conservatory, which is 1436 Southwest Montgomery. It's a few blocks up from PSU, and there's street parking. You can get a parking pass at Portland Actors Conservatory for $2, and it's a $5 suggested donation. Mm-hmm. And it starts at 7, if I yes. didn't
and
mention that.
Parking is free after 7, though, so that's a good thing for
and
us.
And that's this Thursday?
It is this Thursday, January the 5th. It is at 7 o'clock p.m.
Okay, well, thank you very much for both of you coming in tonight. That was Monica Fleetwood and Krista Helms from the We Grab Back Women's Networking event tomorrow night at Montgomery Park in Southwest Portland. You can find out more on Facebook. Their page is called We Grab Back.
Members of the 115th Congress were sworn in today in what will soon become a government dominated by Republicans across all three branches. Free Speech Radio News' Nell Abram has more.
Controversy loomed over the first day in session, just hours after House Republicans voted to eviscerate the Office of Congressional Ethics, the only independent panel charged with overseeing lawmakers' behavior. The political debacle began Monday evening when, with no notice and on a federal holiday, Rank-and-file Republicans easily approved rule changes that would have effectively rendered the OCE impotent. But lawmakers backpedaled at the 11th hour after a firestorm of criticism. Aaron Sherb is Director of Legislative Affairs for Common Cause. He joins us from Capitol Hill to talk about what happened and what we can take away from the fast-moving attempt to unpack independent ethics oversight from the current Congress. Aaron, welcome to FSRN.
Great. Thanks for having me now.
Bring us up to speed. What happened here?
Late last night, Republicans voted in their caucus to effectively eliminate the Office of Congressional Ethics, an independent entity that oversees ethics and ethical conduct of House members. After a significant outpouring of criticism from concerned Americans across the country with phone calls and emails and social media pressure, early this afternoon, House Republicans reversed course and decided to preserve the Office of Congressional Ethics and keep it as it is.
Let's back up a minute. What exactly is the structure of the Office of Congressional Ethics?
Well, the Office of Congressional Ethics was created in 2008 after the Jack Abramoff lobbyist scandal. The existing House Ethics Committee, which is composed of sitting members of Congress, so essentially kind of foxes guarding the hen house, continually failed to do its job. It failed to enforce its own members. It's kind of like being a judge and a jury at the same time. And so the House created the Office of Congressional Ethics, which is an independent watchdog entity composed of former members of Congress, academics, and other distinguished individuals. So members of Congress don't have to police themselves.
And how would the proposed changes have altered it?
The proposed changes by House Republicans would have placed the Office of Congressional Ethics within the House Ethics Committee, which is a fairly feckless entity. The proposal would have prevented the Office of Congressional Ethics from communicating with the public, from sharing information with the public. It wouldn't have been able to launch its own independent investigations without sign-off, either actual or perceived sign-off from the House Ethics Committee. And so it basically would have gutted the entity and made it completely lack, eliminated all independence from it.
So the rule change is off the table, at least for now. But what does this episode tell us about the state of the GOP?
Well, when campaign where Donald Trump ran a drain the swamp pledge and message, I think this shows us that they've really done a 180 in reverse course. And in fact, it was not a drain the swamp pledge. It was just in name only. And as the House, as the Office of Congressional Ethics isn't codified in law, it's just within House rules. There'll be continual efforts to defund and to eliminate the Office of Congressional Ethics going forward.
We saw some schism here between the rank-and-file Republicans and the GOP leadership. Do we see a party in disarray?
I think, look, then-Speaker Boehner was always reauthorized the Office of Congressional Ethics, and I think he realized how bad the optics would be to eliminate the only independent ethics watchdog that the House of Representatives has. And so Speaker Ryan and Majority Leader McCarthy, I think, want to give some kind of free rein to the rank and file members, but that's not always a good idea, and I think they realize that.
Some members of Congress say the ethics panel is partisan, denies members of Congress due process, and needs to be reformed. Do you agree?
Well, we've seen the Office of Congressional Ethics, which is an independent body, nonpartisan body, has investigated Republicans, investigated Democrats, and while it lacks subpoena power, it's far from perfect, but it's certainly a step in the right direction. It's done a number of investigations that the House Ethics Committee refused or did not take up for whatever reason. And so there is a process in place, and we will, Common Cause and other groups will continue to work to strengthen that and hopefully get it subpoena power and codify it into law.
Aaron Sherb is Director of Legislative Affairs for Common Cause. He joined us by phone from Capitol Hill. For FSRN, I'm Nell Abram.
Presidents Clinton, Bush, and Obama have all had the confidence of 70% of Americans on key measures of credibility just before being sworn in. However, a recent Gallup poll found that a majority of Americans lack confidence in Donald Trump's ability to handle an international crisis. And that's not all. 47% doubted his ability to use military force wisely, and 44% believed him to be incapable of averting major scandals during his time in office. Trump fared better on the domestic side, though. Nearly two-thirds of respondents expressed confidence in his ability to work effectively with Congress and to manage the economy. The poll also showed a clear split between Republican and Democratic voters, with Republicans expressing much greater confidence. Between 77% and 90% of Republicans polled expressed confidence in Trump's abilities. The report came as Trump criticized China and North Korea on Twitter and expressed the view that North Korea won't be able to hit the U.S. with a nuclear weapon. The poll draws just from over 1,000 respondents in the D.C. area and didn't include data on the public's attitude towards Trump's cabinet picks.
A republishing of Adolf Hitler's anti-Semitic manifesto, Mein Kampf, has become a surprising bestseller in Germany, with 85,000 copies sold recently. First published in two volumes in 1925 and 1926, Mein Kampf, which means My Struggle in English, was written while Hitler was in prison and is considered Hitler's autobiography. Unlike earlier editions, the reprint has a plain white cover without a picture of Hitler and contains no swastikas or other Nazi symbols, as they are banned in Germany. In a statement, Andreas Worsching of the Institute of Contemporary History said concerns that the republishing would serve to promote Hitler's far-right ideology have proven to be unfounded and instead have promoted mature debate about authoritarian ideologies. In a related story, in Berlin, a reproduction of Adolf Hitler's underground bunker has opened as a tourist attraction. The exhibit is about a mile away from the original Führer bunker, where Hitler killed himself. The Topography of Terror Museum, which is dedicated to the documentation of Nazi war crimes, has criticized the attraction as showmanship. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Khalid Mosley, Tony Latigre, Al Khan, Tom Flynn, and Miriam Woodman. The producer is Jenna Yokoyama. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News and the Oregon News Service. Our engineer is Wesley the Potentiometer Seiwei. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.com/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Kanan Schlesinger.
And I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Paul Rowland welcomes your calls on Wednesday Talk Radio. At 9, Political Perspectives presents the fifth and final part of the series Black Power, 50 Years in D.C., and a look at the Black Arts Movement. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. And at 11, The Bike Show will dive into the dynamics that can make a bike shop great and what can make them so intimidating. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate. Night, Kanan.
Night, Jenna.
Night, Wesley.
Night, Wesley. Good night.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Next Level, a benefit dance party on Saturday, January 21st, after the Women's March, starting at 8 p.m. at the Jade Club in Portland. This 21 and over event features Jen O of Strange Babes, KBOO's DJ Anjali, and Casual Aztec, as well as performances and more. Again, that's Next Level, a benefit dance party on Saturday, January 21st at 8 p.m. at the Jade Club, 315 Southeast 3rd Avenue in Portland. More information on the event can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, the transportation choice of Portlanders since 1946, with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab has a mobile app that allows you to book a cab with your phone, available at the App Store, Google Play, and at radiocab.net. Or, if you prefer, you can talk to a real person at 503-227-1212. This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet, so I turned myself to face me.
All right, we are live.
Hey, good evening. This is the Transpositive